This Fan Run podcast is brought to you by DraftKings.
Football fans, I'm sure we all love an action-packed, high-scoring NFL game, but the latest no-brainer from DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, you'll be a winner once single points are scored. New customers who bet just $1 on any team to score can win $100 in free bets. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code FANRUN in all caps. Bet $1 on any team to score and win $100 in free bets. If they score, you score with promo code FANRUN in all caps this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older and Tennessee only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line. 1-800-889-9789.
What is up? Good morning. Welcome in to The Blitz here on Fan Run Radio. Charlie, GP3, and Ryan hanging out with you on this, it's Cyber Monday, ain't it?
Oh, it is.
We got the big deals all around the interweb today.
Yes, we do.
You guys got any deals you spotted, you like?
NFL Shop has 20% off right now. Might dabble around on there.
All right.
Nice. I'll probably just grab one of the new Spider-Man movie tickets. They go on sale today.
Well, they went on sale at midnight, and
it's crashing everywhere.
Yeah, it crashed. Like, nobody could get tickets.
To go see the movie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the movie doesn't release until December 17th, I think, is the date. But the tickets went on sale at midnight.
Yeah. So movie theaters are back. If we're having tickets sell out at midnight for movies now, I thought that...
Exactly.
I thought that was, you know, the days of the... Of yore.
The days of yore.
I honestly did, too. I didn't realize people were still...
That's shocking to hear.
But, hey, it's good to hear.
I'm really excited. I like that. I love movie theaters. I didn't want them to die out. I mean, there hadn't really been anything I want to see in one for quite a while, but...
Fair.
Man. I want to see the Spider-Man movie.
Yeah, right? It's going to be sick.
I didn't even know they were making a new Spider-Man.
Oh, where have you been, Charlie?
In a better place.
I guess that's fair.
Stupid Spider-Man movies. Hey. Spider-Man is the dumbest superhero of them all. He is the worst superhero.
He's the most relatable.
How is he the dumbest?
Because there's a comedian that had a whole bit about this, but he's right. His interdependence on needing to be in a cityscape to be a good superhero. If you put him in Lincoln, Nebraska, he can just swing around one tall building. What's he going to do?
What
superhero? Come to crime closer over here with my web. Pew, pew.
What about Aquaman? Dude's got to be in water. Is that not a little worse?
I think he can come out of water, can't he?
But Spider-Man still has his strength and everything else, whether he's in a city or not. It's just going to be a lot harder to get around fast.
I actually did a good little joke of that. Like in the first the new Tom Holland movie, it was pretty funny. You know, it's like he tried to, you know, get away from a house really quick and he just sprayed into his web shooter into nothing. And then you're like, okay. Then he just saw him like do a montage of running. You're like, okay, at least they play into it.
Yeah. Well, then you got someone like Hawkeye, who's technically not even a superhero.
And he's still just as effective as Mr. Spider-Man.
I would say maybe, Spider-Man's probably...
he's got some wheels.
I have no idea.
But that's going on today. I'll probably try to grab a ticket if they open up. Look at MLB Shop, grab a couple jerseys maybe. Definitely in need of another one.
Got to get that Wander Franco now that he's been locked down.
Oh, yeah.
It's always the best when one of your players gets locked down for quite a while.
Right?
So you know that you can be comfortable buying their merchandise.
Yeah.
I mean, you're seeing that a lot now with young superstars just getting these massive deals. Like Fernando Tatis got a huge one. Wander got his, although his is very affordable for what most people are thinking he's going to turn out to be. Acuna got a long-term deal that was also pretty affordable. I guess...
How bad of a look is it with these long amounts not getting a lot of money? Like, you know, investing early, not committing too much money to it, but clearly these guys are going to be worth a lot more than that.
I think it's smart initially, but the way I look at it is these players might end up holding out later, or once they realize their worth, maybe even hold it against the team they're currently playing for not giving them more at the beginning. I could see that always happening.
But I mean, they're making more now than they would have because of it. So I guess
because they would be on their rookie deal, and so they're still.
And it's still. I mean, I guess it is a risky gamble to an extent for a team. I mean, you know, as sure as much as we think that Wander Franco is a sure thing, you know, as much as he impressed in his first year, he could just go out there and you know they they have a little bit more information on him, and they figure him out a little bit, and then he can't counter, and all of a sudden he's like an average player. I'm not saying true. I think that's going to happen because I think Wander Franco is going to be a stud.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's always that risk these organizations are running as well when they could just keep him on rookie contracts. So I think it goes both ways. But generally, if I'm the team, absolutely I would be in favor of locking down some of my younger guys early, even if it means paying more now. It still pisses me off that the Washington Nationals haven't tried to just, you know, make Juan Soto sign a 10-year deal or something
like
that.
Yeah, not for life. Has there been any rumblings? Any contract extension? Anything?
I don't know. I saw an article the other day about what the Nationals should do to try to make Juan Soto a National for life or something along those lines. But yeah. I can't even think of his name right now, our GM. That's how out of it I am.
Wasn't he the one who got kicked out of a Braves game during the pandemic?
Yeah, Rizzo.
That's right.
If I was Rizzo, I would call up Juan Soto and I'd give him a 17-year deal at $30 million a year. $35 million a year.
There's no way.
Oh, my Lord.
I'm sensing a little bit of bias in your breath.
That's what I do.
Just a twinge.
That would be the worst contract in the history of baseball.
You think?
No, Bobby Bonilla is probably still.
Yeah. I don't know. 17 years?
17 years is a long time.
He's what, 22 right now? That's 39. He'll be good when he's 39. You know, he'll still be drawing walks. Okay, you know what? Maybe I'd take it down a notch. Maybe like a 12-year, $35 million deal.
I think anywhere between 8 and 12 is like the perfect spot for a young superstar.
Yeah.
Maybe, maybe got a little carried away there. But... Yeah, I mean, a lot happened, though, in the time that we were gone. Thanksgiving, obviously.
Tennessee played a basketball game and a football game.
Basketball, football, crazy college stuff, coaching carousel, MLB free agency. Chance lost again and probably in top four, middle four, bottom four.
You can't even make this up. That man is just unlucky.
You know? Losers find way to lose.
My team went off.
Wait, us winners, you know, winners find ways to win. GP3 finds ways to rig fantasy football that I haven't figured out yet. But
absolutely dominate.
Other than that, you know, pretty good weekend.
Yeah.
Well, actually, no, not having a good weekend.
Oh,
now that I think about it. I mean, really, the Vols, you know, struggled with Tennessee Tech. The football team didn't beat Vandy by as much as I hoped. The Titans got embarrassed. Nashville SC lost in the worst penalty shootout I've ever seen. Max Scherzer might sign with the Mets. Things are going terrible, actually, now that I think about it. But, yeah, we'll get into all that on the other side. Stay with us right here on The Blitz. Stop fearing the consequence. Drinking every night. So, busy weekend for the Vols. We had a basketball game. We had a football game. Now we have fans worried that our coach might leave us. So, where do you guys think we should start?
Let's just go in order.
Just go in order?
Yeah.
Well,
football?
We'll start off on Friday then. Tennessee basketball. Tennessee Tech. Well, wasn't exactly probably the result that we were hoping for, at least to start the game. Things not going well for Tennessee against Tennessee Tech, and you know this isn't really that good of a Tennessee Tech team either, at least in my opinion. There, I know that the announcers kept saying, "Well, you know they were competitive with Memphis." Well, not really. They lost by 24. I guess they were in that game for a little bit in the first half, but it was still an 11-point game at halftime. So I don't really know what they were talking about there. Tennessee Tech beat a D2 team, lost to Chattanooga. Lost to UNC Asheville, who, as of late, has finished at the bottom of the SoCon recently. They somehow beat Lipscomb, which Lipscomb has not played well this year. So even the line in the first place that was just minus 22, I thought, felt weird. And the game, kind of followed suit, just being a weird game. Tennessee Tech had a 35-34 lead at halftime. Junior Clay just looked unguardable at times. You know, I thought the defense looked like they were kind of out of place at times. I thought that, maybe we were a little bit sloppy at times and just made some mental errors that were really frustrating. But ultimately, he do pull it out. And it's your young guys, you know, really that kind of help you pull away at the end. But were you guys ever really, you know, worried at any point in this game? Or, you know, is this a game that you just kind of write off and just say, you know what, hey, they pulled it out. They'll learn from it. They'll get better. Is this a sign of, you know, maybe some weaknesses?
I was never worried that we were going to lose it. I was frustrated with the way we were playing. But when you're playing a lot of these smaller schools and you're a top-ranked team like Tennessee is, you're their Super Bowl. You're everybody's Super Bowl as far as, like, these lower-class schools. So, I mean, you're going to get their best shot. They were shooting lights out in the first half, couldn't miss. And, you know, Tennessee was struggling, which we've seen them do twice now when they can't hit the three ball. Really seems to affect them. But I was never really worried, but I did get frustrated with the way we were playing, and I wish it didn't take a heroic effort from a couple freshmen to beat a Tennessee Tech team.
Yeah, that was a little worrisome. And, like, the thing that really – I wasn't, like, worried. Like, I saw, you know, the score was getting close. I'm like, man, this is a lot worse than what we should be showing. But it just kind of – the thing that I'm taking away out of it is we really need our bench pieces. We need that extra depth, especially the three-point shooting. Like you said, we couldn't – we shot terrible, what, 26% for the game? I think just Powell just not being there was a huge blow, and it makes me think that we really need Josiah Jordan James just doing all the little things that he does, because clearly we were in an uphill battle for quite the long time in this.
Well, we were fine without Triple J during the North Carolina game.
Yeah.
So, there, I mean, there's that. But, I mean, he does do a lot of stuff that doesn't really show up in the box score, but I don't know. How, like, just so far what we've seen this season, I don't think he's done much to help the team at all.
Yeah,
he's been a detriment, if anything.
I don't know about that, just because I think that there is value to having him on the floor, even if, you know, he's not necessarily the best shooter in the world. Obviously, he needs to either be a better scorer or find a different way to impact this offense. But, you know, he's a leader. He's someone that I think most of the guys look up to. He's a good defender. You know, I think not having Powell though was, you know, maybe a bigger loss, just because Victor Bailey has to play more when Powell's out. I think that, you know, we're going to continue to see that Victor Bailey is going to get phased out of this rotation more and more, unless, you know, he's having a hot night. And I think Powell kind of takes over in his place a little bit. I mean, Victor Bailey, as much as I really do love the guy.
Has he made a three yet this season?
Has he? He was 1 of 5 and 0 for 3 from three. Against Tennessee Tech on the year, he's averaging just 4.2 points a game, 1 rebound, 1 assist, and is shooting 32% from the field. Not great. You know, if you go look at his game log here, let's see. He made 1 against ETSU. He was 1 of 2. And against UT Martin, he was 2 of 7. But 0 of 4 against Villanova, 0 of 1 against UNC, and 0 of 3 Friday against Tennessee Tech. And I really hope that he's a guy that, you know, find a shooting stroke, because I want him to be more involved on this team. But, you know, I think you're also okay if he ends up not needing to be as involved. Other than that, you know, you had some guys that were, you know, a little under the weather playing in this game Friday. You had Powell miss because he was under the weather. So, you know, that also, I guess, certainly affects play when you have some guys that are sick. Overall, though, Kumwa, he was your leading scorer on the day. He's 8 of 8 from the field, 18 points.
2 of 2 from 3 also.
Yeah.
What a champ.
2 of 2 from 3. Santiago Vescovi.
Vescovi.
Although Santi. Did you see the announcer Friday desperately tried to avoid saying Santiago's last name? He just kept calling him Santi and Santiago, and I was just like, oh, you are scared. You are scared to say his last name because you don't want people tweeting at you if you say it Vescovi, and you don't want to be wrong if you're saying it Vescovi.
Well, I think Kessling started calling him Vescovi now.
Yeah, so. I had to listen to that UNC game on the radio driving back from the Titans game, and it was Wilkerson that was on the call because
they
had a football game. But I know Wilkerson was calling him Vescovi, so I don't know if Bob made that switch too, but you know, he was all right. He was, you know, 4 of 12, 3 of 10 from 3. He had 13 points. Fulkerson gave you 14. And Vescovi, your leading rebounder too, which is interesting. Kennedy Chandler, he gave you 15. I thought, generally, I thought he played well, but Rick Barnes was rather critical of him after the game, so, you know, you guys.
Barnes is always going to be hard on his point guards. He was the same way with Jordan Bone.
Right.
Yeah.
When he can see the potential in somebody, he's going to ride him.
But it's one of those that also he knows the potential. He knows what Kennedy can be. So with Rick Barnes, he's just all about getting you the best of what you can be. And so it's one of those that he's like, man, I know you're better than this, man. So if I keep just, you know, getting after you, really just not yelling at you, but really just letting you know every little thing that you did, he just wants him to get to that next level, which right. I like that in a coach. I do, especially with a talent like Kennedy, you know.
And I think probably one of the undervalued performances against Tennessee Tech was Brandon Huntley Hatfield. Kind of in that second half, he had a little stretch where I think he made three shots in a row for the team, three or four in a row. And really that's kind of what jump-started the separation when Tennessee finally started to pull away.
Yeah, no, I was about to get to that. I think Huntley Hatfield actually absolutely was pretty great in the second half. And, you know, he was a guy that, to me, through the first four games had looked kind of lost. He looked, you know, maybe like it was still a little bit big for him, and he wasn't quite confident in what he was doing on any given possession. But he's a guy that I tabbed personally at the beginning of the year. I don't know if this will be true anymore given how well Kennedy Chandler's played, but at the beginning of the year I thought, you know, I said this will be the guy that is your best player by March. I think in terms of the tools, in terms of the raw ability and the skill that he has, you know, I think he has it to be able to just turn into a star. And I think he's the one on this team that has by far the best NBA potential. But Rick Barnes was going to kind of need to get his hands on him, and, you know, he was going to be thrown in the fire a little bit. He is supposed to just be a senior in high school right now. But Friday, things kind of came to him a little bit, and I think maybe he honestly stopped thinking as much and just kind of played basketball like he knows how to do. So that was an interesting development from this game. That's something that I'm personally pretty excited about, and I hope that, you know, he can build on this rather than this being a thing where you look back and, well, he had that one really good game against Tennessee Tech, and, you know, he's been all right for us. Yeah, I hope that this is a building block for him, but overall not incredibly worried about this game. Just, you know, there were some extenuating circumstances, and, you know, Tennessee Tech got hot a little bit. Junior Clay got hot. He ended up pulling away, and I think, you know, Rick Barnes will use that as an opportunity to teach a lot of these players, you know, what he wants out of them and what to do differently. I know what do they always say? It's better to learn from a win than it is from a loss. So I think that's one of these situations.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
Next up for Tennessee is the Blue Hose of Presbyterian on Tuesday.
Tomorrow night? Is that 7 p.m.?
Mm-hmm. I guess, yeah, Tuesday would be tomorrow. You guys are right there. Blue Hose off to actually a pretty solid start, at least record-wise. And I don't know if...
Have they lost to a Division II art school yet?
That's my favorite story of the day. I don't care all the big stuff that happened over the weekend. We will talk about that at some point today. You know, we'll leave it at art school, but
a little teaser for later.
A little teaser for you. The one thing about Presbyterian, they do have a guy in Rayshon Harrison. That's a sophomore, and last year he was the Big South Freshman of the Year. And he was a 1,000-point scorer in high school, and he was an all Big South Conference preseason kind of guy, and he's currently averaging 21 points a game.
Wow.
So ooh,
pretty good.
So yeah, that's those are solid numbers. The problem is, despite having a guy that averages 21 points a game, Presbyterian is averaging just 64 points a game. So that's not great, but, you know, you look at Presbyterian, their schedule this year, they've played the Citadel, which they won in 2 OT. They got pieced by Cincinnati, and they barely beat VMI. They beat, you know, barely beat New Orleans, barely beat Central Arkansas. So this is a game that you should be able to take care of business and, you know, continue to grow as a team.
One more little tune-up game before you
right.
kind of start to get into the meat of your...
Yeah, I mean, really, the only thing in this game really is just don't let somebody else besides Rayshon Harrison score.
Yeah.
Like, if somebody else gets hot and Rayshon Harrison has his normal night for Presbyterian, you know, then maybe you're in a little bit of danger. But let Rayshon – I mean, Rayshon – obviously don't let Rayshon get his. But if Rayshon gets his, you know, and if he has, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20, if he even gets the 21 that he averages, it's not the end of the world because, you know, you have seven other guys, eight other guys on that team they're going to play that – don't score a whole lot, and if you can just limit the rest of them, it's not a big deal. But it should be interesting, a good test for our guards to get to guard someone like Rayshon Harrison.
We can't survive against Presbyterian with a showing like Tennessee Tech, right?
No, I think you can.
Yeah, I think you probably still
not like
by.
Okay, not like the first half. Need a more complete game.
I would say Presbyterian's probably just a little bit better than Tennessee Tech, so
yeah.
You know, maybe like 7 points better, 6 points better. Obviously, you don't want to repeat performance.
Yeah, you don't want to come out and repeat what you just did. But I don't know. I mean, it's a game I would like to see us win by at least 15 points.
15. That's the comfy level for you.
That's where I would put it right now. Just win by at least 15.
Well,
comfortably, not like run away with it and shoot free throws down the end to get to 15, but like consistently have around a 15 point lead throughout the game.
Well, you mentioned, you know, last little tune-up game because December is about to get a ton harder. You have a 6-1 Colorado team that you're going to Boulder to play. You got Texas Tech, who's 6-0 up in New York in the Jimmy V Classic. You got even a UNC Greensboro team who is usually really competitive in their conference. But then obviously in Nashville, Memphis, which that game is at 11 a.m. local time. It's an early start.
It's really early.
But, you know, you have top 10 Memphis. You have Arizona, who's looked very good. Very good early. Surprisingly good, really. Arizona even, you know, they smoked Michigan. So I'm kind of nervous about that Arizona game. And then, you also start conference play in the month of December. You have Alabama on the road as well. So things about to get a whole lot tougher. This team going to have to grow up fast. But, yeah, on the other side, we did play a football game this weekend, too. We'll get into that in a little bit more. Stay with us right here on the Blitz. Josh Heupel wraps up his first season as the head coach of the Tennessee Volunteers, at least his first regular season, with a win over in-state rival Vanderbilt. And a 7-5 record, which is good for the best of any first-year Power 5 head coach.
Let's go.
I'm kind of, like, looking back on it, pretty stunned to see what he was able to take over and what he was able to accomplish in his first year. It's...
Yeah, I mean the fact that you were able to go play teams like Missouri, like South Carolina, you know, like...
Kentucky,
even, and feel confident about your ability to win.
And, I mean, I feel like they were even confident in the games they lost in Pitt and Ole Miss.
Right.
Even Georgia, I mean, they had a first quarter lead against Georgia. It's not like they came out and just got punched in the mouth right away. He had the team ready to compete in every single game they played this year.
I mean, you look at the five losses, they all came to either, you know, teams that were ranked at the time of the loss or currently ranked.
Yeah, and I mean, Pitt, you can, you know, there's a lot of what ifs with that game. What if?
What if the official decided to spot the ball
correctly,
not 1 yard behind where it should have been? Yeah.
If Hooker starts that game.
If Hooker starts that game. And you connect on any. That game is really just frustrating to look back at.
If we played Pitt again, no doubt in my mind we wouldn't.
How many times did we overthrow someone that, you know, was wide open in the first quarter alone? Like, was it really like 6 or 7?
It was a lot.
Probably.
Except for the very first pass in that game was a complete dime to Jalen Hyde in the back of the end zone. He just hit his head on the way down and dropped the ball. But
it's crazy to look back at that. You know, that game, our leading receiver had 59 yards.
There was the one play where receiver was wide open. I mean, it was like a 20-yard throw, and Milton still overthrew him.
Aggravating.
Ole Miss was another game that you could have won easily, or not, like saying it easily could have gone the other way. That was one of those games. I mean, I guess you could say the same thing about Kentucky.
Yeah, like Kentucky easily could have gone the other way against us, but, you know, Ole Miss and Pitt, you feel like you easily you know, he could have won those games if one play was different, really.
Right. Yeah. But you look at Missouri, South Carolina, and those games weren't even close. You dominated those. I think he scored 28 points in the first quarter against South Carolina. Ran for over 200 yards against Missouri. So to get us to a point where it feels like we're beating the middle of the pack SEC teams again in year one, I think is a good sign for what might come in year two.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to give Josh Heupel a grade, and one of the, you know, because let's get cheesy here and do what everyone sure. does. If you're going to give Josh Heupel a grade for year one, you know, what is it?
I'd probably give a B minus.
A B minus?
B minus.
Okay. Do tell. Why?
Are you saying that's too low?
Yeah, I'm thinking that's a little lower. Just at least for me, I'd go closer to like a B, B plus.
I'm leaning B minus just because he didn't start Hendon Hooker, and I think starting Joe Milton is ultimately what costs us the Pitt game. You start Hooker in that game, you probably win it. And then the Florida game, I'm still pretty upset with the way he coached that game. I think that was a very winnable game, especially looking at the way Florida finished the season. I know you had the two drop passes from, was it Callaway or Holiday? I think it was Callaway.
It was Callaway.
Mm-hmm. But has Callaway played since the Florida game? Why was he playing in the Florida game if he's not good enough to play since then?
Well, to be fair, you know, it wasn't just Callaway that was playing early in the season. It was Walker Merrill. It was Ramel Keaton some. It was Jalen Hyatt. And I think that was when, you know, the competition was was too tight.
Well, I mean, Walker Merrill still got a little bit of playing down the stretch as like a string.
But like, A, the competition was really tight in camp. B, Valus Jones Jr. was hurt in a lot of camp and even, you know, injured some at the start of the season. So some of those guys got to play a little bit more. And then, you know, those three guys really separated themselves from the end of the year on. And then, you know, as hard as frustrating it is, too, that we didn't start Hooker, the reports out of practice were that Milton was connecting on those passes.
Looking amazing.
You know, that he was able to throw those deep balls, but they would be right on the money. That, you know, he would hit those throws over the middle. And if he's doing that in practice, and then you'd expect him to do in the game. And if, you know, he's doing that in the game, then he's one of the better quarterbacks in the country. But the fact of the matter, he's not, because he can't.
But the thing I lean on or go back to is, if Milton never gets hurt, does Hooker even get the start? How long does he ride Milton?
Things could be incredibly different.
Yeah.
I mean, we could be a 5-7 team that's talking about, I hope, you know, so-and-so school takes hype. Well, let's start this thing over. So that's a great, I mean, yeah. You're right.
I don't know. I feel like he exceeded my expectations. I'm going to go ahead and say that, especially after the Florida game. I did not expect us to get to 7-5. but I just don't think, with the way the season started, I can go over a B-minus. Just because we've talked about it the past couple of weeks. I feel like this season can be looked back upon in the what-if season. Like, if a couple things go your way, you're looking at a completely different outcome. You could be 9-3 with a chance at getting 10 wins for the first time in over a decade.
See, that's one of those that, man, I feel like that's just really hard to even put on Heupel because, yeah, the potential's there, but 10 wins in your first season in a Power 5 conference.
Oh, I'm not saying I'm expecting. Yeah, I expected them to come out and get 10 wins, but after the way the season went on, 10 wins was
very possible.
Including a bowl win, because not 10 regular season wins, but 9 regular season wins was completely achievable with the way the SEC turned out this year.
Yeah, and it's one of those that every time with Heupel with this, it's the situation he came in on is the thing that I always think about is how did the end of the year end up with the way that it was starting? Like what we were saying, he doesn't have the depth. He didn't have, you know, too much, I won't say too much knowledge about it, just because he had a lot of these people that we saw kind of emerge and show their true skill set as the season kind of progressed right here. But I think Heupel did a pretty damn good job. Like 7-5, I'm really happy with that. You lost to the teams that people expected you to lose to, and that's pretty much all I can really ask for. I'll probably get them closer to like a B plus, just because this is such a firm foundation to build off of, and you don't have to go as crazy in the transfer portal as you thought you would have to be.
Well, see, the way I look at it, there's a difference between grading Heupel for what he accomplished this season and the way I have my expectations set for Tennessee football.
Right.
My expectations for Tennessee football are not to go 7-5 every year. And Heupel going 7-5 this year exceeded what I expected us to do, but I'm not going to change my overall expectations for what I expect Tennessee football as a program to be able to accomplish each year. And in that case, I'm giving him a B- because I'm not going to lower my expectations overall to try to sway myself into liking a coach a little bit better than, you know, we should. And now I think he did better than what I expected him to do, but my expectations for Tennessee football are higher than going 7-5. And that's where I'm keeping – the moment we start moving the goalposts is the moment that, you know, Tennessee football loses its relevancy amongst the college football ranks.
Yeah. I mean, yes, like I get the point that you're making, and you should hold Tennessee to those standards. You know, if you're Tennessee football, you should win at least 9 games a year, every year. But it's unrealistic to be able to have those expectations in Josh Heupel's first year at the same time.
So no, which
it's kind of like a weird balance, I get what you're saying because you expected less for Josh Heupel, but more for Tennessee. But you know, in a general sense, you expect more for Tennessee football.
Yeah,
you know, I guess there's some sort of balance in there. I think I'd probably give Josh Heupel like a B plus to A minus, somewhere in that range.
That's range, I'm thinking.
You know, contextually, given the roster attrition, given generally the fan apathy at first, given the injuries that he dealt with. The schedule, I don't know. I just felt like in a lot of ways he did overachieve. But at the same time, you know, there are things you would like to see him do better. Obviously, the big thing is, again, there's the big question about the quarterback. Did Joe Milton getting hurt basically save Josh Heupel
right.
to an extent?
Well,
because he was forced to play hooker. That'll always kind of be a question that you have.
Well, also, the best win we have on the season is Kentucky. And I'm not taking right. anything away. Kentucky's been a good team this year. But it's Kentucky. We don't lose to Kentucky.
I also feel like you had a tendency to compound mistakes this season at times. I felt like you had a tendency to, you know, I guess not really a tendency, but in that Kentucky game, you kind of failed to put them away. The defense kind of faded down the stretch. So, you know, there are things, obviously, that needed to be better. But I still think in year one what Josh Heupel did, I'm very pleased with. I think
completely.
Yeah. The groundwork is now there to be able to then take the next step. And the schedule is favorable to be able to take the next step. And if you get the right people returning, if you get Hendon back, Cedric Tillman back, which I expect them to be back,
I really hope Sed comes back. He was so good down
the
stretch.
He was so good this year.
I mean, if you get, you know, a lot of those pieces from your offense back and you look at the schedule a year from now and you can just get your defense from a point where they're average, you know, the sky's the limit for you next year. And I think, you know, I don't want to really make a lazy comparison to Ole Miss just because Lane Kiffin and Josh Heupel both run flashy offenses or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think there is a really strong comparison there between Lane Kiffin and year one to year two at Ole Miss. And now what Josh Heupel is going to try to go from year one to year two. It's an offense that returns a lot of players, a quarterback, hopefully, just like Ole Miss did. And it's a defense that you're trying to get to go from bad to average. And if you do that, you think you can win double-digit games. Well, Ole Miss, they returned a lot of their pieces from year one to year two. They got their defense to a pretty average level, even, mm-hmm. you know, at times playing above average. And they won 10 games. You know, so I think Josh Heupel certainly laid the foundation. You know, he did. I'm pleased with what he did this year. And again, now you just got to improve on that. You got to build your roster a little bit more, and you really got to find a way to get that defense deeper and just overall better, especially at the linebacker position. But things looking up. Things are looking up, and I think overall, good first year. Can't wait to see where the bowl game's at. But
Duke's Mayo Bowl, hopefully.
Please, please, Duke's
Mayo Bowl. Go ahead and buy your jars.
Stay with us here on The Blitz. Going to switch gears on you here for a second. I know GP3 previewed it earlier, but as we, you know, just have about 5-6 minutes left here, one of the funnier things that's happened in quite a while happened last night in college basketball. So, UC Davis, they are in the Western Athletic Conference. They are a Division I basketball team. They have a pretty good football program. They certainly aren't that bad of a basketball program either. They're usually, you know, in the middle of the pack in their conference. Sometimes they beat some teams. And generally, they have been playing pretty competitive basketball this season. You know, they night one, they upset Utah State. They follow that up with a win against an Eastern Washington team who I believe won the Big Sky last year. They have a close loss with Pepperdine, a close loss to Sacramento State. And then last night, you know, they get a little night off. They, you know, basically a bye week before they get into their December games. They play Division II school, Academy of Art. Who, you might ask? Well,
ooh,
I'll answer. The Academy of Art. They are a privately funded, basically liberal arts school that I did not know existed. I don't really know if anyone knew they existed, but they have a 100% admissions rate. They have open admissions, rolling admissions. They are private for profit, basically. They are an art school in San Francisco. I didn't think an art school in San Francisco that was private for profit school would even have a
I didn't know they even had an athletics department.
Or
alone.
Yeah, or even athletics in general. You know, yeah, are these kids
artists? Did they even have intramurals on that campus?
But here we are. Those two teams playing each other last night. And what does the Academy of Art do to UC Davis? Bends them over. Completely bends them over.
Oh.
What does Russell say? Shows them
bends them over the barrel and shows them the 50 states.
Yeah, they bent him over the barrel and showed him the 50 states. I mean, it was disgusting.
Their jersey said Art U on it.
Yeah. That doesn't even line up. How are you the Academy of Art, but then your jerseys say Art University? Those two things don't even make sense together. I mean, all these if you look at the degrees, communications, everyone on this team is getting a communication degree, besides Chiquino Sisisco, who's getting an architecture degree.
He came here for the real deal. Came here to learn something.
You look at this team, they have a ton of international players and like former Division I dropouts. I can't believe that happened, really.
I mean, that's got to be the worst upset of like recent. That's got to be up there with App State over Michigan in 07, as upsets go.
Maybe greater. Maybe almost greater. 79-60, it wasn't even close. 38-26 after one half. A 19-point victory. Adrian Bergelinek had 14 points. He was your leading scorer. Latrell Williams was your leading rebounder. But
do you have their roster pulled up?
Yeah.
Who's the tallest player they have?
The tallest player they have. First of all, they needed overtime to beat San Francisco State this year. They needed overtime to beat Sonoma State. They lost to Chico State. I don't even know what Chico State is. They came in having lost three of their last four: San Bernardino, Stellenius State. These are
other Division II schools.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
6'6", 6'4", 5'11", 6'4", 6'4", 5'11", 6'1", 6'6", 6'4", 5'11", 6'5", 6'5", 6'4", 6'2". Oh, and here we got 169. Chiquina Sisico is 6'9". He is their tallest player. The architecture kid, yes. The architect is I assume, probably their center.
Oh, that's his nickname right there, the architect.
He
that works too well.
He's from Mali, West Africa, and also played at Pensacola State before this. Just unbelievable. They have four Division I dropdowns on their roster. So, you know, I guess, you know, that's all fun and games. They have it's unbelievable that they won this game. I can't think of an upset anywhere near this. And they shot 61% from three. 61%. Meanwhile, UC Davis was 7-22 from three. But 61% from three to pull off an upset. Is that the highlight of all these kids' lives, probably? Maybe? People actually knowing about the university, the Academy of Art, ArtU?
Is that bigger than the UMBC over Virginia, 16-1?
Yeah, I mean, it's not bigger in the sense of importance, but I think it's a bigger...
Similar.
It might be a more... I can't call it. I can't say that out loud and seriously.
There was another big upset over the weekend, too. You had Dayton upset number 4, Kansas, I think.
Yeah, Iona beat Alabama.
Yep, and then Alabama's playing Memphis. Or not Memphis. They play Gonzaga, I think, tomorrow or Wednesday.
I think it's tomorrow. But, man, I just... That's so funny.
That's wild.
The Academy of Art. Basically South Harmon Institute of Technology smokes UC Davis. So that'll do it for hour one. We got a packed hour two on deck. We still got a little bit more Tennessee football talk, presumably. We got coaching searches happening all over the country. MLB free agency kicked off. And we got to finish out our top four, middle four, bottom four redraws at some point, too. But a lot coming up. Stay with us here. Hour two. On deck on the Blitz.